And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program comes to you transcribed from Boston, Massachusetts. It is entitled Be Franklin American, written by Joseph Mindell and starring the distinguished actor Ralph Bellamy as Benjamin Franklin.
Picture me, if you will, an old man with a round face and eyes that peer over the tops of spectacles, rummaging through the years of my life, indulging in autobiography, a vanity common to the elderly. It may be that I will ramble a bit. I am not as methodical as I used to be. You will not mind that, I hope, for one does not dress for private company as for a public ball. And I speak to you privately, as to friends. I speak not as others have spoken of me, not of Benjamin Franklin, statesman, diplomat, scientist, philosopher, inventor, author. No. Let me speak of B. Franklin, American. Here I am, then, returned, alas, in spirit only, to Boston. My friends in Philadelphia will understand, and the good people of Boston will, I hope, welcome me back to the city of my birth. The house on Milk Street where I was born, surely it is gone. But the street itself, does it still remain? I have thought of them often, and of the shop where, as a boy, I learned the printer's trade. Apprenticed to my brother James.
Bring the form, Benjamin. Hurry, lad. He takes his time about it. Oh, do you not know enough to lock a form? Type is scattered all over the floor. 2 hours of work gone for naught. You good for nothing?
My brother James was not the kindest master. But I learned to set type. Yes, to lock a form, to run the press. What I wanted most, to write for his newspaper, the New England Courant, that I had to do in secret, slipping my little essays under the door at night to be found in the morning and read by James and his friends.
Ah, another contribution from our unknown correspondent.
From Silence Dugood?
Aye, he writes with an edged pen. And listen.
He? Silence Dugood claims to be a poor widow.
Nonsense. These words are not a woman's wit.
Yes, but the name has a female ring, if you know what I mean.
Names. Look at the letter to the editor in the last issue. Where is it? Here. From Abigail Afterwit. From Timothy Turnstone. Tom Penshallow. Tabitha Talkative. Ichabod Henroos. What are you laughing at? I see nothing humorous.
Don't you, James? No, of course not.
Bah! They copy the style of England. Never mind his name. Listen to what he writes, this Silence Dugood. And Benjamin, don't stand there like a carved pew bench. Get to work.
Let the boy listen. Perhaps he will learn something.
Oh, he already has an opinion on every subject.
James, Silence Dugood?
Yes. Oh, well, this is what he writes. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man, as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another.
Hear, hear.
Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech.
Well written and well thought out.
Benjamin, pay heed, lad. I'm calling you. Did you ever see a more fatuous smirk on a boy's face? Here, Benjamin, here. Set this in type just as it is.
You're not going to print this.
Why not? It's what I believe.
The council will not be pleased. Cotton Mather.
You should know that I do not publish my newspaper to please the council or Cotton Mather.
But they have already given you warning. This article will inflame them further against you.
I am a printer, my friend. I print what I believe. So long as... how does Silence Duguid say it? As long as by it, I do not hurt or control the right of another. And as for this article, if a pretext is needed, sooner or later the council will find one.
James? James, the bailiff is coming.
Calm yourself, my friend. Catch your breath.
I ran ahead to warn you.
I've been expecting a summons from the council.
James, there's talk that they will confine you.
Not for long, I think. A week, perhaps, is a lesson.
And that they will forbid you to publish your newspaper.
Then we'll use the scheme we have contrived. Give me that pen. I'll sign the document now before the bailiff comes.
He's only 17, James. Is it wise, do you think, to make Benjamin the publisher of the Courant?
Oh, for a short time. Only while I'm away. The bailiff. Benjamin, quickly, quickly, lad. Take the document and show it if you must. And Benjamin, remember, you are now the publisher of the New England Courant.
Have you seen the Courant? The new publisher, it seems, does not like the prevalent use of honorary titles.
What does he know of the world, a boy of 17? Well, read it. Read it aloud.
I thought you weren't interested.
Who said I was? It's only that I...
Never mind. I'll read it. In old times, he writes, it was no disrespect for men and women to be called by their own names. Adam was never called Master Adam. Master Adam.
Well, go on, go on.
We never read of Noah, Esquire, nor the Right Honorable Abraham, Viscount of Mesopotamia, Baron of Canaan, nor do we see...
I'll tell you something about this Benjamin Franklin of yours. If he continues in this way, he's very likely to go to jail.
You're wrong, my dear sir. If he continues in this way, he is likely to go very far indeed.
I remember how my father used to gather his family around him. He had 17 children, and I remember as many as 13 sitting at the table while he read to us from the Bible.
It hath been told thee, O man, what is good, and what the Lord doth require of thee, only to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God.
I have never forgotten the words of the Hebrew prophet Micah. Thus it is that how far and how high have never seemed to me to be as important as how the journey is made. And thus it is also that I have endeavored to weigh others as myself in Micah's scale. And I have not been impressed by titles of honor, nor prejudiced by man's faith or race or the color of his skin.
We'll kill them all.
Every murdering redskin.
In the year 1763, long after I had left Boston and was settled in Philadelphia, in that year some Indian tribes of the Six Nations fell upon the western forts and massacred the soldiers.
And the women and children.
Angry mobs gathered near Philadelphia, threatening the Conestoga Indians who had long lived among us in friendship.
Prime your guns, boys. They're vermin to exterminate.
There may be some here who know me.
Aye. We know you, Ben Franklin. Now stand aside.
No, you do not know me if you think I'm so easily stopped from talking.
There's nothing to talk about, Mr. Franklin. You're giving shelter to the Conestogas in Philadelphia.
The Conestogas have done no injury to you, nor to your family or friends.
Mr. Franklin, my brother was in Fort Pitt, whose garrison was massacred.
Not by the Conestogas.
Indians are Indians. What difference does it make?
The difference between justice and murder. Between civilized people and barbarians.
Take care, Mr. Franklin. Don't push us too far.
What is the crime of these poor Conestogas? That they have a reddish-brown skin and crooked noses?
Maybe that's a good enough reason.
Is it? You, my friend with the red hair.
Who, me?
Your hair is red and your face is covered with freckles.
There's no call to make personal remarks.
If a man with red hair and a freckled face should injure me or mine, would it be right for me to revenge it by killing every freckled, red-haired man, woman, and child that I could find? You do not answer, my friend.
Mr. Franklin, We mean to have those Indians.
You will not take them.
You threaten us with your soldiers?
No, with the kind of world you will make for yourselves and your children by such an act.
The mob was dispersed and an evil deed was averted. But the matter was not ended. For while I condemned the Western Indians for the massacre, I advocated equally that the murder of innocent Indians be punished. I think I made as many enemies as friends that day.
There will never be any prospect of ease and happiness while that villain Franklin has the liberty of spreading about the poison of that inveterate malice and ill nature which is deeply implanted in his own black heart.
Ah, well, it is not always possible to do justly and to love mercy and be liked by everyone. I will not ask you to judge the blackness of my heart, nor of my enemies. Rather will I remind you that if man can on occasion match the devil, it is also true that they were made but little lower than the angels. We must take them as they are, fluttering all their lives between the depths and the heights. Is it not then the part of wisdom to so arrange the world in which men live that they will soar higher rather than descend? This, it has always seemed to me, is the task of the philosopher.
My dear Mr. Franklin, you are no philosopher.
No?
You see, Mr. Franklin, I've read your pamphlet, Proposals Relating to the Education of Youth in Pennsylvania.
Surely the education of youth is a fit subject for philosophy.
Oh, most certainly. But some time ago you wrote, what did you call it? Plain Truth. And before that, a proposal for promoting useful knowledge. And earlier there was...
Try my modesty, sir.
That was not my intention. I was about to point out a strange circumstance connected with your writing.
Now you arouse my curiosity.
I have noticed that each of your statements somehow results in the establishment of some institution that no one has thought of before. A public library, a company to fight fires, a learned society, a voluntary militia.
You will agree, I hope, that these are good things?
Of course they are.
And you also agree that Pennsylvania should have an academy, a college, as I demonstrate in the pamphlet you have in your hand?
Perhaps I do. But, Mr. Franklin, you did not come to me to discuss the philosophy of education. You came to ask for money.
Ah, a philosopher should never ask for money.
Let me explain. You don't mind my talking in this manner?
My dear sir, in my time I have been called many names. One more or less will matter little.
Well, then, philosophy, you see, is a discipline that requires a certain objectivity. A detachment, one might say, from the hurly-burly of daily life.
I may be wrong, but it seems to me to be quite the contrary.
You are wrong, Mr. Franklin.
And yet, if a philosopher tries to discover what is right and good, should he not also endeavor to bring them out?
No, absolutely not. That is not his domain.
It must be a great comfort.
I don't know what you mean, sir.
To be infallible.
But
I once knew a certain lady who, in a quarrel with her sister, said, I don't know how it happens, sister, but I meet with nobody but myself that's always in the right.
Mr. Franklin, I'm sure that Pennsylvania will have its college. How much money do you want from me?
I leave that to your conscience and your pocketbook. I ask only one thing.
Yes?
Pay your contribution in yearly quotas for 5 years.
That's a strange request.
Not at all. When you divide the whole into five parts, each part will be so small as to be painless.
So that I will give more in 5 years than I would in one. Mr. Franklin, I salute you.
I am happy, my dear sir, that you see the advantages of philosophy.
The most exquisite folly is made of wisdom spun too fine and withdrawn too far from the hurly-burly of life. I would like all men to be free, to do justly and love truth and mercy, but, alas, they will not do so by my urging them. Thus it is that I have devoted myself to furthering schools and hospitals and a more abundant way of living, for if men are sick and hungry and ignorant, how can they comprehend freedom? You will understand my reluctance to deal with abstractions.
And perhaps you will also understand that while the Continental Congress appointed me to the committee for preparing a Declaration of Independence, the writing of it was given to young Jefferson.
I cannot help feeling, Dr. Franklin, that you should have written the Declaration.
No, Mr. Jefferson. This must be a noble and lofty statement of our beliefs, must it not? A solemn document.
Yes, but
there
still...
are some people who say that I could not resist putting in a joke here or there. I'll tell you something, Mr. Jefferson. I think maybe they're right.
Dr. Franklin, you have read the first draft of the Declaration.
I have, and it has my complete approval. If I may make a small suggestion.
Of course, Dr. Franklin.
You have written, "We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable." I would have it, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." For, Mr. Jefferson, the equal right of all people to life and liberty is an obligation that every man must recognize he owes to his brother. On the day the Declaration of Independence was adopted by Congress, I was appointed to another committee with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, a committee to devise a seal for the United States of America.
Well, then, so far we agree. On the face of the seal will be the motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one.
As to the reverse side, I've sketched a suggestion, if you don't mind moving closer to the table. Now, it shows Pharaoh in a chariot, sword in hand, pursuing the Israelites through the divided waters of the Red Sea. Is my drawing clear enough?
Perfectly, Dr. Franklin.
Good. On the other shore, in the rays of the divine presence, stands Moses, arm uplifted over the sea, as the waters are about to engulf Pharaoh. Well, gentlemen?
It's a very elaborate design.
The symbolism seems to me to be very appropriate.
Perhaps a little too biblical.
Consider, Mr. Jefferson, are we not like the children of Israel threatened by a tyrant, by King George?
Yes.
Are we not like the children of Israel, few and weak against the many and the strong?
I will not deny it.
And do we not also have confidence in divine assistance for a just cause?
I'm convinced, Dr. Franklin. I will vote for your design.
I am pleased. This is not a very important matter, and one design may turn out to be as good as another. Yet, even in small things, I have the need to express what I believe. Therefore, Mr. Jefferson, I propose a motto. Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. In the Great Seal of the United States, the spirit of the committee's report was adopted, but of our specific recommendations, nothing remained except the motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. And in 1776, the motto of our original suggestion was yet to be transformed into reality. There was much to be done. There was a revolution to make. I was 70 years old, and old men do not make revolutions. Congress sent me to France as a special minister to do what I could do, raise money, gain allies, make friends.
It is the carriage of the American, Franklin.
A personage of distinguished appearance.
Vive l'Américain!
Wherever I traveled in Paris, in the provinces, the people greeted me with enthusiasm and friendship. From noblemen of the court to the coachman who drove me, they paid such honors that my head was in danger of being turned, until I realized that the respects they offered were for the new nation across the sea, struggling for liberty. I remember a peasant who came to me cap in hand.
Excuse me, monsieur. I have wandered a long time. Maybe you can tell me.
Yes?
What is it like there in America?
I'm not sure that I know what you mean.
I will explain it, monsieur. I work on the estate of the Sieur de Polignac. 8 sous a day.
8 sous?
Oh, I am not complaining. A person learns not to be hungry.
It is a bitter lesson.
But there is the corvée, working on the roads. Hard work and no pay. Tell me, monsieur, is the corvée hard there in America?
There is no corvée.
No?
And if the man for whom you work does not pay you what you deserve, then you leave and find work elsewhere.
It is permitted?
Why, certainly, my
friend. Of course, if you say so. That is what you mean by freedom, n'est-ce pas?
It is not easy to say everything that freedom means. It is not a very good answer.
It is a good answer, monsieur. Do you think there is something for me for a stranger in America?
Listen, my friend. America offers to strangers a good climate, fertile soil, wholesome air, free government, wise laws, liberty, a good people to live among, and a hearty welcome.
I would like to go to America. I would like to help you fight this war for freedom. It is a glorious war.
You must not say that, my friend. We must fight. And it may be that we are fighting not for ourselves alone, but I think that there never has been nor ever will be any such thing as a good war or a bad peace. When will nations learn to settle their disputes without first cutting one another's throats? It is a question I can ask but not answer. When the war was over and my work in France was finished, I counted up the years and found that I was 79, and that of the last 28, I had spent 25 in Europe. It was time to go home. Now I returned, in my thoughts at least, to the city of my birth, to Boston.
£100, Dr. Franklin?
Yes, to the free schools of Boston. The interest of the money to be used for silver medals to be awarded to the best scholars. Do you have that down?
Yes, sir. I have it.
Now, the next clause in the will deals with... Why such a long face, young man? After all, I'm the one who...
Please, Dr. Franklin. It distresses me even to hear you joke about it.
You must forgive me. It is an old weakness of mine. Well, I wish to leave several million pounds each to the cities of Philadelphia and Boston.
Right.
Young man, your mouth is open.
I didn't know that you were so wealthy.
Oh, I don't have the money. That is, not yet. We'll start with £1,000. Write it down. £1,000 to each of the cities.
I don't understand,
sir. It's really simple. When I was a young man, not yet 25, and married, I set up as a printer with money that was lent to me. £1,000 is to be used for loans, at interest, of course, to young married tradesmen just beginning. The principal and interest are to be accumulated for 100 years.
Why, in that time, the total will amount to...
£131,000, of which 1,000 are to be spent on public works, and the remainder continued as loans for another 100 years.
Then each city will have...
If no unfortunate accidents have occurred, £4,061,000. Young man, you dropped your pen.
I don't know what to say.
You might say that it's a respectable legacy. That is, for a philosopher. But the coin of philosophy is truth, and I would be pleased if in all the words and thoughts that I have lived there were found a small legacy of truth. Yet, if such truth be found, I do not claim it as a discovery. For it has been told us what is good and what the Lord does require of us. Only to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with our God. This is our common inheritance. To be understood by pursuit of learning and cherished by furthering the institutions of learning that are at the foundation of all society. Here I am, then. An old man, reflecting, as I said, on the years of my life. If I were given the choice, I would have no objection to repeating the same life, only asking the opportunity that authors have in a second edition to correct some faults of the first. May it be the same, my friends, with you.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Benjamin M. Reeves, member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Mr. Reeves.
in the interesting script we have just heard presented in celebration of Benjamin Franklin's 250th anniversary. The final incident stands out as a striking illustration of the uniqueness which characterized B. Franklin, American. Franklin, we will all agree, was a unique example of a great man. Even in the will he drew up, there stands out the values in which he believed. In this will, Franklin left far more than pounds. He left in one document a type of summary of his attitudes, his teachings, his values, which governed the full life he led. To us, 250 years later, there is a lesson which we can derive from this incident. Benjamin Franklin, in drawing up his will, put his full and complete faith in the generations of the future. He gave them hope. Are we today doing as much? I believe that at times it would be wise if we ask ourselves what we, as individuals, are doing with our lives that can be of value. Not now, but for future generations. Are we giving to the future any faith? Are we instilling anywhere in the world any hope? Or are we so involved in our own everyday living that we are ignoring the broader picture of the years to come, the children yet unborn? If we cannot answer the question satisfactorily, it would be well that we re-examine ourselves to make certain that we are living our lives to the fullest possible capacity. In other words, every man and woman, you and I, have the opportunity to write a spiritual will each day of our lives, in our services to our fellow man, and in devotion to God. Not only do we add meaning and direction to our own lives, but we communicate purpose to the lives of men, women, and children of generations to come. The story of Benjamin Franklin, great American, should inspire us to devote more and more of our energies, our time and our talent, to the good of the society of today and tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Reeves.
Our Eternal Light program today came to you transcribed through the facilities of Station WBZ in Boston, Massachusetts. The script, B. Franklin, American, was written by Joseph Mindell and starred Ralph Bellamy as Benjamin Franklin. The music was written by Morris Mimorski and played by Mike DiNapoli. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were William Siren, Conrad Jameson, William B. Reeves, Richard Kilbride, and Streeter Stewart. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Henry Lundquist.
This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.